This is Bill Tiller of Tiller.org. You're listening to BBSRadio.com. Don't forget to tune in to The Infinite Consciousness with Eva Herr every Sunday at 7 p.m. Pacific Time. Enjoy.
Welcome to Infinite Consciousness tonight, and thanks for listening. This is Eva Herr, and I have back with me tonight Dr. Gottfried Kellermann, and we're going to get an update on his work in neurotransmitters and psychoneuroimmunology. How are you, Dr. Kellermann?
Oh, fine. How are you?
I'm good, thanks. I know I've had you do this before, but for anybody new that's listening, if you would just give them a little bit of background and where to find you and where to find neurosciences.
Yes. The company is called Neuroscience, and it has a website which can be found under NeuroRelief, one word, NeuroRelief.com.
And I just want to say this, there are two neurosciences, but you're the one that's found at NeuroRelief.com.
Yes, that is correct.
Confused. And give us a little bit about your background so they'll know who you are and what it is that you're doing.
Yes, first part of my life I studied philosophy, and then I began to realize when I was 28, philosophy doesn't make money, so I started working on biochemistry. I got my PhD in biochemistry and biology, and then after that I moved to the United States because I was very much attracted by the science that was going on in the USA. And just shortly thereafter, I decided that that's my country. I loved it so much, and I've been here now over 38 years, and I hope I can stay here for much, much longer. And as a result of the work I did over the years, I stumbled about 10 years ago onto neurology, as a matter of fact, onto neurotransmitters. At that time, I knew very little about neurotransmitters, but pretty soon I began to realize that they play a very, very important role in our life. Actually, they run our lives. They are part of the nervous system, and they are those signals that connect one neuron to the next. So consequently, they are of great importance.
So what is the most recent? I know that before we talked about neurosciences and your work on depression and things like that. Specifically, we talked most about depression, but you're doing new work now with psychoneuroimmunology. Can you tell us what that word means what you're doing?
So you just mentioned the issues of depression, mood swings, mood disorders, and all these kind of things. But I always was wondering what causes those things. What causes the imbalances in neurotransmitters? For instance, what causes those very low neurotransmitters, particularly norepinephrine, that seems to be involved in the clinical conditions of depression and mood disorder? And as a result of that, and there is now plenty of evidence in a new field that started many, many years ago and was hitherto unrecognized, which is called neuroimmunology or psychoneuroimmunology. It is really the connection. It brings into the field of neurology the field of immunology. Actually, those two systems really belong together. Historically, there have been separate disciplines, neurology and immunology, and now we begin to realize that those systems play on each other. And as a result of those intensive studies, a discovery was made that at least 30 to 40% of all issues and clinical conditions of depressions are called by inflammation, meaning an assault on the nerve, on the immune system that has a direct bearing on neurotransmitters and neurological issues.
Wow. So are you everybody's not familiar with medical terminology, so I just want to make sure they understand
yes.
you.
Yes.
So what you're saying is brain and mind and your immune system directly
they directly interconnect. So, for instance, if you have some severe immune issues in your body, you have severe inflammatory issues in your body, they play directly on your mind as a consequence, particularly of chronic inflammation. For instance, you could have some toxicity issues, you could have some severe infections, bacterial or viral. All those things start working on the immune system in the first place. However, the immune system always leaves an imprint on the nervous system. So whenever something is happening in your body, when you feel sick, we all have shared the feeling when we are sick, we are always getting a little bit down. We are not in a mood to work very hard. We are not very creative in those times. So you see, there is a connection, and we knew this for quite some time, but we never really put two and two together. Now we began to realize that a result of inflammatory issues, people truly can become depressed, and this is very, very difficult, particularly for some psychiatrists to understand, and also for the public to understand that.
Well, I was looking around on the internet, and I found a study at Harvard a while ago that associated particular negative states with particular lymph system states. Have you found in your work any connections or particular positive states with particular lymph system states?
Could you repeat this, Professor?
I guess what I'm saying, to make it short, is do you find that the disease and the particular negative state that somebody in is specific? If you have, say, loneliness, do you have a particular immune activity that goes on?
No. That would be a little bit too easy. The nervous system as such, which realizes that you're lonely, that you have a mood disorder, that you're down, that you're depressed, cannot really distinguish from other challenges like a toxicity challenge or an infection challenge. For the nervous system, it's pretty much all the same. It realizes and it just registers there is something going on, so it gets challenged. But to say specifically loneliness or depression is linked to a particular infection or toxicity issue, that cannot be made.
What about in a particular part of your body? For example, I've read some research that says that people that get, let's say, touched inappropriately as a child.
Yes.
The women will get breast cancer and the men will get prostate or testicular cancer.
Yes.
So, or if you hate, you'll get heart and vessel problems. What would cause that? Or have you found that in your research?
Yes, that is true. This is one of the causes of what we call neurotransmitter imbalances. So, for instance, that your norepinephrine goes up or down, or your dopamine level is up or down, or you are particularly a thinker, but many of our listeners will recognize serotonin levels are very much affected by it. So emotional issues, and they can go back very early in life, you know, to the first few weeks and months of life. If, for instance, if there are emotional deprivations, it stays in the nervous system, in the memory of the nervous system forever and ever, almost to the end of our lives. So we are very much affected by those experiences, and it builds up a library in our nervous system that register all those things. Some people do not truly understand that emotionally, the emotions and severe emotions, whether this is happiness or whether this is some sad events, play a very powerful role in our nervous system. Usually when I consult with doctors, I always ask, did something happen in the patient's life? Was, for instance, a woman abused, or were they inappropriately touched, or something like that, or did they go through a divorce and something like that? And I find in many, many cases where we have significant abnormalities in neurotransmitters, that is truly the case. And of course, you know, at the moment we're having a hard time piecing those two things together. We do not fully understand how an emotion really triggers a certain stage or a state of neurotransmitter abnormalities. But I'm pretty sure in the upcoming years we will find what the connection is, how something that's immaterial, like an emotion, how this translates into a certain chemistry in the nervous system.
What about, I've heard, are you familiar with Candace Pert's work?
Yes.
What about her work? And I've heard that the colon is lined with neurons, and that those certain neurons firing cause goes to the brain, to the autonomic nervous system, and causes particular hormones or neurotransmitters fire. Could that be?
Yes, absolutely, absolutely. Many psychiatric disorders start in the gut. And let me give you just a simple example. For instance, let me go a little bit further back. When we have emotional events that really affected us one way or the other in our early life, it has a direct bearing on gut issues. What we see in many of those patients, they have some compromised mucosal barrier function, meaning that tiny holes in the gut are performed or are created by those emotional events, which allow foreign chemicals or toxins or bacteria or viruses leak from the gut into the system. And then in the system, an inflammation gets created, and this inflammation, again, has some bearing on the central nervous system to the effect that the blood-brain barrier, which really protects the brain from the peripheral system, gets leaky. So certain things leak into the brain and cause then inflammation in the brain and cause aberrations in the balance of specific neurotransmitters.
Interesting. You know, I saw a woman. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Yeah. So it is really that now we have to, when we see patients with this kind of disorders, we right away include some immunological workup. We try to find, you know, people who are compromised in their intestinal barrier function. That could be compromised in terms of that they become sensitive to certain foods, that they become sensitive to certain chemicals, they become sensitive to certain medications. These are all signs and indications that something is broken.
I ran into a woman at the health food store the other day, and she had lymphedema, and I said, oh, you must have some kind of inflammation going on somewhere. She went, no, not lymphedema. Inflammation. So
yes.
Why don't you describe what is inflammation if it's not something that's, you know, pus running out of a wound? What is that?
Inflammation is really an assault on the body. So when the body gets assaulted by a toxic event, so we are exposed to certain toxic chemicals, and our modern environment is full of toxic chemicals, or also by bacteria or viruses, then the body launches a defense, meaning this, the immune system, really, which is in charge of keeping out all those foreign substances, it gets activated. Activated to the effect that in the process of activation, certain chemicals get released, in order to fight the challenge or the assault. However, under normal circumstances, the body can deal with those assaults and challenges very well. However, in some patients, for reasons we do not understand, this kind of acute challenges become chronic challenges, meaning the inflammation goes on and on and on. And as a result of that, certain chemicals are secreted which have a powerful effect on the central nervous system. So it's the chronicity of immune reactions that makes a system that was designed really to protect the body, it can make it very devastating to the body.
So allergies and...
Yes.
Diabetes, things like that are
indications
of inflammation.
Yes, that is true.
Okay. So now I want to ask you some more specific questions. What is the difference between a neurotransmitter, a hormone, and a cytokine?
Oh, cytokines are the signals of the immune system. And neurotransmitters are the signals in the nervous system. And hormones are the signals coming from the endocrine system. So really, it is all, you said it correctly, it is all three disciplines that have to come together, neurology, immunology, and endocrinology, that have to come together if you really want to understand what makes a patient sick. In particular, you know, those chronically ill patients with severe diseases, chronic fatigue, things which we really have managed from a clinical point of view. We are absolutely sure now that in those patients, it's the interaction of the immune system, the endocrine system, and the nervous system have to be looked at the same time in parallel. And of course, you know, it was kind of detrimental and devastating that we had separated all those disciplines so much. Think about it. When we talk about neurology, we always think of something is going on in the brain. Something is wrong there. But we forget that really the nervous system is all over our body. It runs the show. So consequently, whatever happens in your body gets registered in the brain and leads to aberration. So that's why we have recently introduced a significant immunological test into our laboratory in order to diagnose a patient a little bit better. And true and behold, what we found so far is, and this is well documented in the literature, that when people have abnormal neurotransmitter levels, they also have abnormal or had abnormal immune reactions. So it is really the nervous system that keeps the immune system in balance, and vice versa. A well-balanced immune system also keeps your nervous system intact. So again, here the parallel. When you have down-regulated neurotransmitters, meaning you have low levels of neurotransmitters in your body, such as norepinephrine or serotonin, you are much more prone to sickness and to getting a cold or a fever or something like that. This means that the immune system, as a result of a suboptimally performing nervous system, that does not function very well. So consequently, from a practical point of view, it is very important first to see are our levels of neurotransmitter in the right balance? Is there enough precursors to make neurotransmitters in our body, such as tyrosine, which makes dopamine or adrenaline or norepinephrine, or tryptophan that makes serotonin? So we have to make sure that we have enough of those precursors in our bodies. At the same time, then we have to go again back to the immune system, where we have to make sure that there is no chronic exposure to toxins. And this is what we find quite often. Particularly recently, we came across of some novel compounds that have the ability to draw out of the body tissues heavy metals such as mercury.
Really?
or lead or cadmium. That once we succeeded in doing that, those people get dramatically better, particularly in the with regard to their mood disorder.
So you have that at your lab?
Yes.
So do you have a test for it, or
was a very recent discovery, and I think within the next two or three months, those new products that allow us to pull out those toxins, those things will become available. I have now just heard 2 weeks ago from a patient whom we had given this new compound. It was an autistic child, and it was the son of a physician. And of course, you know, in clinical trials, we prefer to have patients who are under close supervision and who are really under the observation of professionals. I had convinced the doctor this was a novel compound, and he had a 2-year autistic boy, that it might be beneficial, because we really were at a loss. We made no progress with this patient in terms of, you know, social behavior and all those other autistic features. And after 1 week, the doctor called me and said, Dr. Kellerman, I really don't know what you have given me, but I have seen in those short 8 days a dramatic changes in my boy, which I had never seen in all those other treatments we had given to the boy, in all the expenses we have spent on him and stuff like that. So that tells me that toxins and environmental chemicals can have a profound effect on the health of our nervous system.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, that is very, very fascinating.
It is. It really is. So how does it pull the metals out? Does it bind to them? Does it come out in the feces?
It comes out in the feces. It gets complexed by this noble compound. The important aspect is many of those chemicals get incorporated into our tissues, particularly into our fatty tissues. And that's why, let's try to remember that the nervous system consists mostly of fatty tissue, so meaning all those toxins are highly liposoluble. So when we get exposed to environmental chemicals and particularly heavy metals, then those things go preferentially to the nervous system. And, of course, it stays there forever and ever and ever. I just read an article that people who had been exposed to this kind of heavy metals, I remember now it was last week, I heard from a woman who worked in an uranium factory, 10-15 years ago, but she still was suffering from the effects apparently that got her in trouble. So what we did was we put this woman again on those noble compounds that will help her to draw those heavy metals out of her tissue, and hopefully the nervous system can recover to some degree. I have to say a full discovery probably in most cases will not be possible, because the nervous system has a poor ability to regenerate. But I always say it's never too late, it's never too late. Let's just, try to make the best out of what's left in somebody.
When you say nervous system, do you mean autonomic nervous system or the myelin and nerve?
Both. The nervous system in general, whether this is in the central nervous system, meaning in the brain, or in the peripheral nervous system, usually there is poor regeneration. So it takes some doing. But I would say our experience has been by really taking care of the nervous system, and unfortunately it still hasn't gotten the attention of the conventional medicine professionals, that we really have to take care of it, that the system functions optimally. Because, if you have a well-functioning nervous system, then also your autonomic nervous system, which is fully driven, by the nervous system, particularly in central, those people get so much, so much better.
I want to ask a question about minerals and the autonomic nervous system.
Minerals?
Yes, like magnesium and calcium, potassium.
Yeah. Obviously, those minerals play a major, major role, and nobody really knows for sure what the optimal levels are. So I would say, a good vitamin preparation which has some well-balanced minerals in there, they're always helpful. But certain levels, when they're either too high or too low, such as copper or zinc, can have a dramatic
really?
Effect on the nervous system, which again brings us back to looking for a healthy diet, a healthy, well-balanced diet that provides enough proteins, carbohydrates, and lipids, and hopefully the right lipids. And I cannot emphasize this enough. But what I also have noticed over the years, when somebody's nervous system has undergone some damage, most of the time the nervous system is not able really to correct itself. The damage stays there. And I think for those people, something can be done in the form of really checking their neurotransmitters and substituting or providing certain precursors or other medications to really keep it running very well. And then those people really, you know, get much, much better.
All right. I want to ask one more question before we get into some of your specific things that you're doing, like your five locks.
Yeah.
But what about, what is the enzyme, I mean, the role of enzymes in neurotransmitters?
Well, enzymes play a dramatic role in the nervous system because, you know, we neurotransmitters, which are the active signals in the nervous system, they are built from some very simple amino acids such as tyrosine and tryptophan. However, in order to make those precursors, those precursor amino acids into neurotransmitters, a number of enzymes are involved. And these are, for the most part, either hydroxylases, but don't worry, I will not bother you with chemistry here. So there is an entire machinery of enzymes involved in order to make those neurotransmitters. However, those enzymes, they can be upregulated. Either you can make much more of it, or you can downregulate it, meaning you do not make enough of it. And for instance, let me give an example. One of the enzymes is monoamine oxidase. Some of our listeners might have heard of monoamine oxidase inhibitors. And this particular enzyme, the monoamine oxidase, which is particularly important or plays a role in the metabolism of neurotransmitters such as dopamine or serotonin, it can be regulated and changed, so to speak, manipulated by our daily stress situation. I have noticed it on myself when I go to work in the morning and days I get stressed out a little bit, the levels of the monoamine oxidase goes up dramatically, and when I calm down and I go to rest, then the levels come down. So, you know, why does this have an impact? Oh, this has a dramatic impact because when you have, for instance, high levels of monoamine oxidase, which is involved in metabolism of dopamine, then when you have high levels, then, for instance, of norepinephrine, all of a sudden when you have a high enzyme activity, the amount of norepinephrine in your system all of a sudden gets metabolized much faster, and as a net result, you end up with very little norepinephrine in your system, which again affects your learning ability, it affects your mood, it affects your cognitive function, and so on and so on.
Interesting. All right, I'd like to know about your work that you're doing with Five Locks.
With whom?
The work that you're doing with the Five Locks enzymes and the AKBA.
Oh, the ACPA?
The Norlox.
Yeah, Norlox. And yeah, this actually is an area which we just mentioned in the beginning of our conversation here. It is an anti-inflammatory. You know, since now we know that the inflammation plays a major role in the nervous system, it is important now to keep the inflammation under control. And this is where a lot of our routine effort right now goes, and particularly also our research goes into. How can we keep down inflammation? And how can we stop inflammation in our peripheral system, meaning the nervous system in our body, and our central nervous system? How can we keep the inflammation down, and how can we stop it? I have to tell you, I remember a dramatic case that really brought me onto this. This was about 18 months ago. We just had developed purified the ACPA, which is a part of the Boswellia preparation, which some people use for inflammatory bowel disease and so on. I gave this compound in much higher concentration to some kids who had learning disorders. And true and behold, as a result of using this ACPA preparation, which is an anti-inflammatory, within a few weeks, those children improved dramatically in their school performance. They were much more able to learn, to memorize, and so on and so on, which told me those people really had some active infection or active inflammation in their central nervous system. But it is not to say that all of those children who have learning disorders or what we call ADD or ADHD, it is just some of those are affected by it. And the challenge today is really to sort out what is it in you that particularly causes a particular disease. So that's why we always say anything that has to do with the nervous system, it's called a spectrum disorder. On the outside, we all might appear to be depressed. But a depression in you or a depression in myself on a molecular level could be quite different. And to unravel that, that is really the challenge and also the challenge of the laboratory to always come up with better and more specific tests to sort out what causes in you or in me the depression. Because once we know that, we can treat it in a much more targeted and an effective way. Remember, so many people we just string along, just try out this chemical, try out this medication, try out this supplementation. And sometimes I feel a little guilty. We really use many of our patients as guinea pigs because we really don't know what's going on. So we try out things, and hopefully it works. Yes, it works in some patients, but not in all, and that should be the goal.
Well, it sounds like this would be a very powerful tool for preventive medicine, not just treating what's happening in the moment.
Absolutely.
Down the road.
Absolutely, absolutely. And it's the same thing, you know. There is now more and more evidence that those devastating diseases like Parkinson's disease or Alzheimer's disease, these are really the result of chronic inflammatory issues, chronic oxidative stress challenges, and so on. And so you said it. Those things really can be prevented if we really start working with those patients early on in life to use antioxidants and chemicals that remove other toxins from the body and so on and so on. So there is a lot of work ahead of us, but also a lot of rethinking how we approach the nervous system, and hopefully we take those conditions much more seriously, and I hope that start addressing the status of the nervous system also in our clinical practice.
So how are insurance companies at least opening their door to this?
Slowly, slowly but steadily. Since I have gotten involved in the business of dealing with neurology and neurotransmitter testing, there was quite a change. I still remember 10 years ago when people looked at me and laughed at me and told me, well, there is no room for tests of that sort. Testing neurotransmitters was just, you know, a most ridiculous situation. But now it has become very common to the point that we have now a number of insurance carriers that start reimbursing for those tests we are doing.
You know,
unfortunately, there is no reimbursement yet for supplements, only for medications. So we have to find some avenues to convince those insurance companies also pay for that, because, you know, this is so and so important. Because, you know, it really, in the long run, it would save them a lot of money.
Yeah. You know, that you've come a long way, because I don't remember if I had you a year ago or 2 years ago.
It was about a year ago, I think.
At that time I asked you that question, and you were very, you had received negative, pretty much negative responses for insurance companies. So that's encouraging.
Yeah. So really, that has improved dramatically, which means that people finally begin to realize how important this is. But remember, I think it was about a week or 2 weeks ago where neurotransmitters made the cover of Newsweek. And there was one article in there, for instance, the 101 of neurotransmitters, where they try to explain to the public what is serotonin or what is dopamine and norepinephrine or noradrenaline. So I thought that this is really progress. Yes, for all of us, and particularly for us who are in professionals in this business, it's way too slow. But still, there is great hope that this finally, you know, gets off the ground.
I'm just curious, did you ever connect up with Roland McCrady at HeartMath?
Could you repeat that?
Roland McCrady at HeartMath. Did you ever connect up with him?
I don't get it either. I do not understand it.
Okay.
Can you rephrase your question?
I said, did you ever talk to Dr. Roland McCrady out at HeartMath Research Institute?
No, I did not. I did not.
I've got to get you guys connected up. I just think you need to be.
Yes. Yes.
Okay, the other thing I wanted to ask about was, I have a 15-year-old, and I've noticed that so many of my daughter's friends, when they turn 14 or 15 and they go through puberty,
yep,
something happens not only to their mind, but every one of them starts having horrible bleeding patterns in their periods and pain in their
yep
uterus. And what do you have to say about that?
Yes, this is which brings the point really connecting the endocrine system with the nervous system. To make a long story short, I think the future, for instance, of hormone replacement will be manipulating this nervous system so that the right amount of hormones get secreted. And we know now very clearly that, for instance, when people get PMS, that is very much linked to very low norepinephrine levels. I almost can pinpoint this when patients complain about this clinical condition. I said, your norepinephrine must be on the low side, and true and behold, I think there is almost a close to a 90 or 100% correlation between those symptoms. So it is true. These days, many of our youngsters, different from earlier times, have highly abnormal neurotransmitter levels. We do not know where it's coming from. It's still something that intrigues me very much. But I think it has something to do that we have become a much more stressful society. And also our environment has become much more toxic. There is many more chemicals mm-hmm that attack our systems. And for genetic reasons, some people are more vulnerable than others, which is, you know, that's why it is so difficult to prove that point. There is always the question that comes up from the people who want to be critical, why, if that is so, why don't we all get the disorder, or why don't we all get the same aberration? No, it takes the environment and an individual genetic disposition to come down with a certain clinical condition.
There was another woman that I referred to you recently. She probably hadn't called you yet, but she's coming on my show about insomnia.
Yeah.
She wrote a book called Insomniac. She said that she's had the worst insomnia throughout her entire life, but the only thing she hasn't tried is what you do. So I'm hoping you might can help her. Have you had success with severe insomnia?
Yeah. Very much so. Insomnia, what we know now, is really the result of a dysregulated autonomic nervous system. Which means, if I have 1 minute or 1 second to explain
mm-hmm
that, in the brain there are certain nuclear or certain centers, particularly in the brain stem, that have to be in balance to each other. And there is one center that regulates the autonomic nervous system. And however, this particular area in the brain is again super-regulated by another part in the central nervous system. And if those two nuclei or if those two centers are out of whack, are out of balance, then it leads to a highly dysfunctional autonomic nervous system. And I always say when somebody comes and complains about insomnia, I know immediately there is a dysregulation in the autonomic nervous system, meaning there is some dysregulation in the brain stem, which is really the older part, the old brain in our body.
What do you do for it?
Yeah, what we do for it, it depends. In some people, you have to upregulate a certain centers in the brain, and for other patients, which can only be found out through testing, you have to downregulate certain parts. And the more and more we're working on it, the more we concentrate now of directly intervening in the central nervous system. Meaning it is not just good enough, and then sometimes it would be the wrong approach just to give people a little bit, to treat them peripherally, meaning give them a certain pill or a certain tyrosine precursor or tryptophan. Now, certain things you have to bring directly to the brain. So we started operating or playing with novel systems that could carry some of the precursors directly to the brain, and bypassing the liver and the peripheral system. And by doing so, we see dramatic effects in many of the patients. So I'm very hopeful. I see some progress there. So many of our conditions have to really be treated centrally and not peripherally. And that is also something we all have to learn. Because in conventional medicine and also in as part of the integrative medical approach, too many symptoms are just treated peripherally, and they're just nothing but band-aids. And I always say, unless we really get to the central part of our nervous system, we do not make much progress. However, this implies that really it's the central nervous system that runs the show. And the more and more we work on it, the more this seems to be true. A simple example is when people complain about fatigue and adrenal burnout, then, of course, in the past 10 or 15 years, we always treated those things peripherally or symptomatically. But now we begin to realize that in order to really to get the adrenals up and running again, you have to change something in the central nervous system, and then you see good and long-lasting results.
I'm just curious, and we don't have a lot of time, I still have a couple more questions, but
yes.
If you can't get something to cross the blood-brain barrier, do you ever use anything like DMSO?
Yeah, usually we try to bypass it. Of course, you know, many things, there are transporters from the periphery to the central system. And however, we have started using more nasal applications where things get carried to the brain directly. And so far, with very good success. I have learned this from certain pharmaceuticals that recently have been introduced, and they also use the nasal applications in order really to manipulate certain centers in the brain. And we have now started using the same approach for the precursor therapy, the amino acid therapy. And I have to say I'm just astounded what kind of progress we are making with this kind of an approach.
What about GABA? You know,
GABA. GABA is
for it everywhere, but...
GABA is a very, very important neurotransmitter, and some people say when they take GABA, you know, they really feel the difference. We know in order for GABA to have an effect, it has to cross the blood-brain barrier, but normally GABA does not cross the blood-brain barrier. And in people who report that they get a great benefit from using GABA pills, they feel much better, then I say this particular patient really has a problem, because in those patients, the blood-brain barrier is broken, so that GABA can easily get into the central nervous system. And this is one of the therapeutic efforts to, again, close the blood-brain barrier.
How do you do that? How do you know it's open?
Really, what opens the blood-brain barrier is the inflammatory issues.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so again, here comes the connection mind-body. It is inflammation that could have its origin in the gut. Once it is in the gut, it goes into the system, and then once we have inflammation in the peripheral nervous system, it will break eventually the blood-brain barrier and enters the nervous system. So there is a direct connection here, and this has become a very, very hot topic these days.
Yeah, interesting. Because I'd heard two different stories about the absorption. I couldn't figure out how that could be, but that's logical. It makes a lot of sense.
Yes, yes.
Okay. Now, can people buy things from neuroscience, or do they have to go through their physician?
Yeah, normally I think they should go to the physician because we do not have the ability to deal directly with the public. Plus, you know, there's always it's not that simple in many cases. The interpretation of now the neuroimmunological results, really, you know, you have to be an expert to understand all that. So now we have started in including into neurotransmitter testing also the cytokine testing. And again, the interpretation, like for neurotransmitters, is very, very difficult. So I advise people to find some doctors, whether this is a conventional doctor, we have now quite a few that started taking on our approach, to see whether they can help them and provide them with a test kit. Of course, you know, they also could call the company, our customer service, and then we could see whether we have some doctors in the area where people live.
Oh, that's a good thing. So I have to tell you, I have a doctor that'll do what
okay.
I ask him to when I ask him to order things, but he can't
yes.
interpret them like I know they need to be interpreted.
Yes, yes, yes.
He'll go, everything's fine, even I know it's not fine.
Okay.
You know? So you don't even sell supplements on your site? Any
yes,
kind of supplements?
Once doctors have recommended certain supplements, they can then buy them directly from us.
Okay.
So
okay.
This is possible. But we require that, at least initially, they go to the doctors and either get themselves tested or have a script be made for particular supplements that should be used, because the nervous system is a very tricky system, and what's good for one can be highly detrimental for the next patient.
Right. Now we got a couple of minutes left. Is there anything you want to talk about that we haven't already talked about?
Yes. I'd like to point out that people should take things which we neglected in the earlier days or earlier years more seriously. So I think one of the few approaches would be to be aware of and sensitive whether they have some food sensitivities or when they could remember certain chronic infections. Usually, those people are at high risk. In many of those cases, they have inflammatory issues also in the central nervous system, and that should be taken seriously. Many people think they have never really worked in hazardous environments, but still, our environment now is full of chemicals, and our food is not probably as clean as it should be. So I advise them to become really very selective, and if people feel there is a chronic condition coming on, either, you know, on the endocrinological side, for instance, they have serious problems with PMS, or they don't get any periods, or they cannot become pregnant and stuff like that, that could very much have neurological causes.
So I have a question here. Diet is important. Do you think that we get what we need out of our diet with our food being irradiated? I mean, doesn't
yes,
that kill everything?
Yes. People who really watch out for their diet, usually they do all right. Although I have found that when people in the earlier years did not watch their diet very well, then the system could have been damaged. So many patients tell me, well, now I'm on an optimal diet or on a very good diet, and still I do not get much better. That means or that implies that there is some damage done to the nervous system that first needs to be corrected in order for them to feel the benefits of a good diet. So remember, some of the damage in the nervous system, it can be permanent, and some of it, it can be repaired, but only to a certain degree. And with certain things and certain damage, we all have to live pretty much till the end of our lives.
What do you think about the immune system? And, you know, when we were kids, we got flushed with antibiotics every time we were turning around, and we never used probiotics to restore that balance. What do you think? Do you think probiotics are important?
Yes, it's very important. I feel very strongly what I have seen so far, what comes through the routine in the laboratory, that about 40 to 50% of the people have intestinal barrier function problems. So for those people, probiotics are very, very important, but not only probiotics, but also digestive enzymes, so that the really food gets properly digested. Then other people, again, that they have problems that despite that they're on a good diet, that the body really can make use of the nutrients of the precursors for neurotransmitters. So it is important to make sure whatever you eat, that really your body can benefit from it. And that is these days not always a given.
Do you manufacture, do you sell enzymes and probiotics too, or do you just do neurotransmitter stuff?
Yes. You can see that. People who have chronically abnormal neurotransmitter levels that do not come into balance despite a good amino acid therapy, in those people you have to suspect that they have really a damaged system, and that they have a significant damage to the intestinal barrier in their body. And that needs to be fixed, and sometimes this can take a long time. It's not just that they have to stay away from certain foods or certain medications, but also you have to do something positively for it. And I have to admit, we are still at the very beginning of understanding how to fix what we call a leaky gut. People have coined the phrase a leaky gut leads to a leaky blood-brain barrier. And I think there is a lot of truth to it, and this is what I've observed as a result of having introduced those new neuroimmunological tests. So usually when you have a leaky gut, meaning a compromised intestinal barrier function, that eventually it affects your central nervous system, meaning it affects your sleep, it affects your mood, it affects your cognitive function, all of that.
Very interesting and so logical. It really is. All right, tell us one more time, you're at neurorelief.com.
We are at neurorelief.com, so you find a lot of useful information on that website, but also if people are really lost, that they can call customer service and they can find out whether there is any doctor or doctors in their neighborhood that are open for this kind of approaches. But I have to tell you, there is many encouraging signs now that this kind of information gets out to the public, but also to the medical establishment, that it's the nervous system we have to take care of much, much better than we used to do in the past.
What's your customer service number, do you know?
Customer service number is, I hope I get it right, it's 888-342-7272.
And if they can't find it, they can always email me and I'll connect.
Yes, absolutely.
One more question. Can you get a request from a naturopath or a chiropractor, or does it have to be a medical
doctor? It doesn't make any difference. From our end, we do not take sides. We realize that there is many options to practice medicine, and we do not take sides. Personally, I come more from the traditional side. I've worked in medical settings, and particularly in traditional medical settings, all my life. But I also have learned over the past 10 years that there is many other ways to treat certain clinical conditions. And in many cases, the outcomes are just fantastic.
Okay, good deal. Well, thank you so much, Dr. Kellerman. As always, it was a pleasure to have you.
Okay, likewise.
Thank you.
I very much enjoyed it.
Thank
you so much.
Good night.
Good night.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.